This is the Saxo Market Call, the daily financial markets podcast, across asset classes and around the world.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Thursday, 1st of June, 2023. The session yesterday sort of marked by selling across the board. And I think most interesting in that was the technical factor that we have. The S&P at times back below this 4,200 area that has been essentially the resistance level since back in February. We teased above it once. We went back below. We got a little bit concerned there. And then, of course, some of this AI especially led a boom here. I saw the averages back up to new highs. And now we're sort of back below this level. So it's really dodgy stuff. If you look over the NASDAQ 100, it's a very clean sort of big rally that is clearly led by some of these AI names. But the S&P, to my mind, still looking very fishy here, a totally unprecedented price action with the, it's not really in rally mode. We're seeing almost sideways action. Usually we either see these in low volatility regimes, you see this slow march higher as the passive sort of inflows into the market drove things higher. If you look back at 2017 and 2019 and other markets like that, I think it's some of this option selling that is creating a very confusing environment, whether it's 0 days to expiry options or otherwise. Something is just locking this market in a range. At the same time as we have a specific and isolated AI boom, yeah, I think it's a hard market to observe and draw conclusions on, Peter. I don't know if you share some of those observations.
I think what we have went through is a technology breakthrough in natural language processing thing, which is quite remarkable. The technology is still very early on in the sense that it makes a lot of mistakes. It even tries to manipulate with the truth. It gets a lot of things wrong, but it also is remarkable in many ways. And as I've said on this podcast, the social media is amplifying all the worst attributes of humans. I mean, you can just see the floodgates have been opened with people taking advantage of this whole AI hype to, you know, create a lot of engagement and awareness of silly things related to AI. But underneath all this noise, there is a real trend. I just think that what is happening right now is that, or what happened was that we simply just over extrapolating a short-term trend. There are physical limits in the world to how fast we can produce computer chips, at what cost, etc. And we had a very short-term burst of excitement and rallying these stocks, and we just seeing, you know, the short-term traders that were in looking at some short-term gains here that were spectacular. So why not just take the profit? And I think that is what we're seeing in a lot of technical flows. You can see on slide two the theme baskets that, you know, the semiconductor basket was the worst performer yesterday. I think to some extent, not true reflection of what really happened, because, you know, down 2%, it's not something we worry a lot about. But if you look at the very much more pinpointed AI related stocks, then we saw declines in the magnitude of 5 to 19% yesterday, give or take, depending on which stock you were looking at. So definitely some cracks in that theme, John, and we're still basically in a range trade. I think the market is just still grabbing for or looking for us or an answer of where we should go. There's a lot of conflicting signals. I also, you know, on slide three, I'm highlighting, wrote it in my equity note yesterday, you know, a status on the US equity market. And, you know, we almost back to one standard deviation on equity valuations above the historical average. And on the little chart to the right, there are two charts on the slide today. So and I think it you know, if you haven't put up the slide deck in front of you, try to do it, because I think these charts are very visually great in terms of understanding where things are. So the current valuation level that we have in the US equity market, historically, at least using data over the past 20 years, have not been very great in terms of you know, long-term real rate returns annualized for equities. The long-term average is 5% real rate return when you subtract the inflation. And right now we have a forecasted or predicted range of -3 to +3 from the current valuation starting point. And with that, as the economic data is coming in right now, the surveys, regional surveys in the US, we have the Eurocoin in Europe today showing weakness, considerable weakness here in May in Europe. I'm beginning to doubt this market, John, to be honest.
Yeah, we saw some weak CPI figures out of Germany and France yesterday, also knocking the 2-year lower in Europe. partially impacting into the U.S. yields as well. Although the focus there, as I emphasized on slide four, is on Treasury issuance as much as it is on the incoming economic data, because with yesterday's House vote that saw the debt ceiling deal passed by a strong bipartisan vote, 314 to 117, it'll go to the Senate today. It'll pass the Senate today, possibly tomorrow, if they can't get it squared away today. And then Biden's desk, and we can sort of write off those debt ceiling circus for until the post the 2024 election into early 2025. But as we've emphasized, and as I've tried to illustrate with a semi-fancy slide, to the best of my abilities on slide four, that Treasury account, which was sitting at in sort of early-ish to mid-2022 at almost $1 trillion, and especially in the first part of this year, was drawn down aggressively as the Treasury has to draw on these funds rather than net new issuance because of the debt ceiling to do its spending. That has been a, as it draws down those funds, that is liquidity injection into the economy. And actually, the scale of that liquidity injection, even just for this year, is on par with the Fed's entire quantitative tightening, as I try to illustrate on the right there with the balance sheet, which was partially drawn up again on the addressing the banking turmoil as banks had to access this new Fed facility. So really, the Fed's QT has been effectively offset by this Treasury drawdown. And now with the debt ceiling deal passed, they can do net Treasury issuance, and they will rebuild this account to something like, some suggest, around $500 trillion of net new issuance. And that is a liquidity draw on the market. So it's a risk for yields going higher. And if yields are flat, it's because probably risk sentiment is doing poorly. And it's also drives the risk of a stronger dollar. So I think this is the phenomenon to watch in coming trading days and weeks. It can take, we saw the big move there in 2022 in the Treasury's account. It can take several weeks to a couple of months, depending on the pace that they want to do this. And it's a really critical market factor. Then going forward to the FX slide on slide five, dollar strength still pretty much the theme here. Sterling strength quite profound. I think some of that must be euro sterling flows on that weak CPI data mentioned. It takes some of the stuffing out of the ECB expectations, whereas the most recent UK prints have been more positive. So I think euro sterling is probably the driver more than cable. And I would say cable is looking a bit overdone here tactically, especially if we're concerned about a stronger dollar on the Treasury rebuilding issuance. And then elsewhere, I think the most interesting thing was the big pump and reversal in Euro-Nokia. Part of this, the anticipation of the Norges Bank announcing how many FX or how much they're going to do in June in terms of FX purchases. So as they get revenue in, tax revenue in Nokia from the oil and gas producers, they offset that with FX purchases. It's widely considered to have been excessive recently, and that was part of the reason the Nokia has been trading lower. It was announced yesterday, and they only dropped it to 1.3 billion NOK per day from 1.4 billion in May, and that's despite a very weak currency and despite the fact that the gas prices especially have gone down quite a bit. So there was a brief rally after the announcement in Euro Nokia, so weaker Norwegian krona, but then it came back in quite a bit stronger, as you can see on the chart there on slide five. Is it finally the beginning of some sort of reversal? I think that's going to be up to your space, Ole, if we look forward to what crude oil is going to do next. Part of the, of course, the reason for a weaker Nokia as well, this big dump in crude oil prices we've seen in the last couple of days. And I think I'll save that Turkish lira chart and just go straight to you, Ole, on oil. I know you don't have a slide, but and you've probably talked about the OPEC meeting coming in here, very important, I guess, for next steps for crude oil.
Absolutely, John. We'll have a slide on that tomorrow as well. But true, we're toying with close to $70 once again in Brent ahead of the meeting. Clearly, not the level that Saudi Arabia was had a visit by with the production cut back in early April. They are targeting, well, not officially, but I'm sure they would like to see oil prices hovering in the $80 to $85 areas as the lowest point, and that's not where we are right now. So it will be an interesting meeting coming up, and whether it can do something to boost the confidence in the market. We know that the interest from at the weakest level in 12 years across the energy sector, so plenty of buying potential there if they come up with something that will help tighten the market further. But you mentioned the gas, Norwegian krona, and just briefly yesterday we saw gas price in Europe spike by more than 10%. That may also have helped the top out the Euronav at that point, but the gas price already lower today. It was an outage at an export plant in Norway that triggered that rally. But we are back down to normal again. But most certainly a very close eye on the energy prices right now. Another sector where I think is continue to attract a lot of attention is the industrial metals, with the sell-off we've seen in recent weeks and months almost. I sent out a note on copper yesterday, basically highlighting that copper was actually showing some resilience yesterday following the weaker than expected to China PMI data that came out. And then overnight, we have the private survey, the Caixin manufacturing PMI, showing that we were back into expansionary territory just about. And that was enough to send copper prices up by 2%. So it does indicate the market is potentially running out of sellers here. And we're holding above that the key support level at the 354, which I'm showing on slide 7. Also, I'm seeing reports from various of the major analysts. Obviously, we all know that Goldman Sachs has been very bullish on commodities, very bullish indeed on copper. But I've seen some of the others starting to turn around simply because the added supply that's coming from mines over the next year is starting to dry out. We will see some additional supply this year, but then it will start to dry out. And we're already now seeing the green transformation demand for copper starting to drown out the slowdown we're seeing elsewhere, especially from the property sector. So it just highlights a market where we are likely to see market tightening over time. But it is a patience game right now. The market wants to some clarifications on the direction of China. We want to get some clarification on the depth of the recession elsewhere, if we do get a recession. And while we wait for that, then the macroeconomic traders, or traders with a macroeconomic view, they will be struggling to take long positions in these markets. But most certainly an area where we still maintain a bullish outlook heading into the future here.
Yeah, and then the next slide, an interesting trade, or not an interesting trade, but an interesting setup there with wheat prices dropping below corn. I can't remember what this trade is called. There's some substitution effects that can kick in. I think it's more probably soybean and corn in terms of the protein content, et cetera. But it's extremely rare, I guess, to emphasize that that wheat can drop below corn prices.
Exactly, John. Yeah, it's normally the two oil seeds, oil content crops, soybeans and corn, that there's a comparison. But what we early this week, just briefly, of right now, it's more or less at par, but the wheat dropped below corn prices for the first time since 2013, earlier this week, and just highlights the extreme weakness that we're finding in the wheat market right now. But as you can see on the chart, this is just a line chart, just to go back the 10 years. We are seeing weakness across the board, also in corn, but the wheat is simply being sold off harder than the others. But at the same time, looking at the wheat chart, it's quite interesting to see that we actually got some negative divergence during the latest sell-off. If Kim Kramer was here, he would be talking endlessly about it. But when you have a market where you see a new low, but you actually see a higher high on the RSI, that does indicate some sort of fading momentum. But right now, it's you would probably argue it's a catching a falling knife syndrome. But it's just from a technical perspective, it does indicate that the recent weakness in wheat has not got the same level of energy as we've seen in previous periods of weakness.
All right, and back in the equity market, very interesting names reporting after the close yesterday. At least one of them was reporting after the close. Maybe both of them were petered there on slide 9. One of these being a cybersecurity name, which has been one of your focal points. Take us through that, and then the Rémy Cointreau. I suppose that's a luxury stock category, or is it not, as a liquor company?
Oh, well, they have brands in the luxury segment. I think they also have a lot of brands that are, more accessible to the wider population, if you will. But yeah, if we start with CrowdStrike, one of those cybersecurity stocks, the theme had been red hot. Also, if you read back to our first slide in the slide deck, you can see that the cybersecurity theme basket was the best performer going into the close, up 1.5%. There's so high expectations for this theme, also because of the consistently high revenue growth, the high demand. The war in Ukraine is drumming up a lot of demand, and also the conflict between the US and China on various levels are also heightening security, cybersecurity related measures from a lot of companies and governments around the world. And CrowdStrike, I mean, they delivered against the analyst estimates, and they also forecasted a 35% revenue growth in the current fiscal year we're in, which will end in January next year. And that exceeded, and there was a small, upward revision. It exceeded the analyst estimates, but it was simply not enough. I mean, investors had implicitly increased the expectations beyond what was already, priced or, implied in the analyst estimates, and the shares were down 12%. So, growth is not unbounded, not even for cybersecurity, and investors are reassessing this case. But CrowdStrike is one of those companies in this industry that is growing much faster than the industry average. They have some interesting products. They have interesting delivery model as well for some of these cybersecurity applications. And then Rémy Cointreau, as you mentioned, John, the shares initially were up 6%. I think the market was very enthusiastic about the operating income. They looked pretty well. It was above estimates, etc. But then, as the market digested comments in the press release that they're saying that they're seeing a very strong drop in some of their, and there were some very specific categories in the product portfolio. And I think it's just simply underpinning this the weakness we're seeing generally in the retail sales. And it's still another data point that is makes you a little bit uncomfortable, I think, on the U.S. economy. I really, I mean, if we go into a contraction mode in real terms in the economy, I really hope it just becomes a soft landing. But then we don't need a lot of these data points before I'll get more nervous at least. So I think Rémy Cointreau, last time I checked, the share price had almost been faded to an unchanged level for the session in Europe. And then Salesforce, obviously one of the largest software makers in the world, competing with Microsoft in enterprise software applications. They have been over the past year on a laser focused mission to improve profitability a lot. This is a company that for two decades grew revenue consistently at between 20 and 25% plus. That has been the long term, expectation that have been bolstered among its long term shareholder base. They delivered on this profitability, and it was really forced upon by some very powerful activist investors in the US. They deliver on that and more than that. They even put out a guidance, I think, on their earnings that are beyond what the analysts had expected. But the revenue growth was still enough. The low revenue growth for this year was still enough to send the shares down 5% in the market, reminding everyone that is investing in stocks that yes, profitability is important, but revenue growth is one of the dominant and most important forward-looking indicators on future shareholder generation, under the assumption, of course, that you have a positive operating income margin. But revenue growth is super, super important for pricing and changes in valuation of equities. So Salesforce maybe should not prioritize profitability too much. Earnings Watch, slide 10. We talked a lot about Broadcom. They did a deal recently with Apple, strategic deal. They have been lifted due to this AI-related hype, but if you look at the analyst estimates, the analysts are not really buying that this will buying this sentiment from the market that it will deliver a lot of growth. So Broadcom is actually expected to see pretty meager growth rates in the coming quarters. I'm zooming in on Lululemon actually today. It's a U.S. retail company, and given the commentaries from Rémy Cointreau and the general weakness we have seen in U.S. retail sales, I think it's going to be quite an interesting earnings release. This is a company that is taking market share from other companies in the same industry. As I said, they're branching out away from yoga pants into shoe categories, general clothing, etc. So this is a very interesting company to follow, and that you can see here on slide 10, the revenue expectations are quite high for a company given the slowdown we're observing in the economy.
Yeah, you talked about a couple of weak points in the U.S. A couple of those yesterday, the Chicago PMI, really ugly there, 40.4. This is not doesn't tend to be as volatile as some of the other ones like the Empire and the Philly Fed. So that 40.4 versus 47 point something expected and 48.6 previously. I mean, that's a very, very stark pace of contraction. And there was a Dallas Fed manufacturing survey also weak. And there were some anecdotal comments plucked from that I came across that I don't have in front of me, but were very negative. So that leads into today's ISM manufacturing, an important U.S. data point. But before that, we have the Eurozone preliminary May CPI, and we also get the core CPI, at least the year-on-year, the estimate with that. That'll be out before most of you have managed to hear this podcast, but watch for that after the German and French were undershot expectations. And plus you get the core here, which of course is more important anyway. So that's expected only to have dropped to 5.5 versus the prior 5.6. So a miss on the downside there, I think interesting for for the euro and obviously for ECB expectations and the yield spreads that have been part of the drought, what's driven, sorry, the euro a bit lower here. And then we have the ADP employment, or sorry, payrolls change, private payrolls expected plus 170K. That's about par for the course. The non-farm payrolls series is out tomorrow. It's been sort of on a moving average basis, trending downward for the better part of a year, but month to month can be, you know, of course, do anything, but we'll be on watch for that, as well as average hourly earnings tomorrow and the May unemployment rate, which is sitting around that to record low for the cycle, 3.4%, 3.5%. And weekly jobless claims, which have been really a frustrating data series this year, because there were a bunch of prints that were revised higher, suggesting that there was getting to be a bit more slack in the jobs market. Then those were revised, especially some of the worst prints recently were revised back lower because of some fraud discovered in Massachusetts. Just leaves us all a bit sort of reluctant to know what the heck is going on week to week versus what was traditionally a pretty reliable data series. So that one is up today as well. And all this leading into next week's, or not next week's, but the FOMC meeting the week after next, where the odds of a Fed rate hike have edged a bit lower. A couple of Fed comments yesterday discussing a pause. We'll see. I think we'll need a couple more data points to get a better sense of that. We'll get the next CPI ahead of that meeting as well. So stay tuned for that. And yeah, we'll be back tomorrow again, of course, with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.